just to synopsize, we were holding Nassim, Ethan of Gaza, gets himself a reputation as someone who could heal your soul. Word gets to Shabtai Tzvi, who at that time was in Egypt. He decides to go to Gaza to meet the soul healer. And as we saw last week, Nathan informs him he's not sick, rather he's Mashiach.
Yeah.
Right, as we saw last week, Shabtai Tzvi doesn't initially accept it. They go on a significant tour of Mekamos HaKadoshim in Eretz Yisrael.
He already thought he was Mashiach.
He did. See, that's the funny thing, is he did, but at this point he was normal, not manic. It's hard to know. You know, he had, even though he had made messianic claims for almost 20 years already, he at least partially thought up until this point that he was, you know, he acknowledged his problems in a tacit way.
So what, he'd go back to normal and he'd kind of be like, whoa, what did I just do?
Yeah, what did I do? And I would like to be Mashiach, but I don't know if I really am, you know, stuff like that, apparently. We don't have extensive,
Nobody knew what was going on in his head.
It's not only that, it's before he was famous, no one was really following him around and listening to him. So afterwards, after all these episodes, then yes, he thinks he's Mashiach all the time. But earlier, apparently, when he was normal, he was minimally unclear about it. Okay. So again, they go on this big tour together to visit the Kvarim, become a Kedoshim, and in the midst of all this, Shabtai Tzvi obviously tells Nathan his life story. They get back to Gaza a little before Shavuos. Shabtai Tzvi is hit by a severe depression. However, a little after Shavuos, to be exact, Yud Zayin Sivan, May 31st, 1665, Shabtai Tzvi goes back manic and accepts Nathan's nomination as Mashiach. Mm-hmm. And that's where it really starts. That's the beginning, the real beginning of the Shabtai Tzvi movement. Okay,
Did he get like a little trophy?
No, unfortunately, whatever. Okay,
He was only nominated.
What?
He was only nominated.
Well, no. He was declared. Nathan declares him to be Mashiach. And we're going to see first, let's go through this step by step. There's a very important document. There's a lot of, I don't know, if you've read this in other places, but there's a very important document which is termed Machze de Rabbi Avram, the vision of Rabbi Abraham. Okay. Nathan claims to discover a Ksav Yad, a manuscript, from a Rishon who lived 500 years earlier. In the 1100s, who was an Ashkenazi Rishon, who fasted for 40 years every day, in other words, daily or Friday, Shabbos to Shabbos, whatever it was.
Can't be healthy.
And barely talked to anybody, blah, 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 blah. And he had this vision. And the vision of the Machzor of Rabbi Avram includes a lot of biographical information about Shabtai Tzvi, which Shabtai Tzvi obviously told Nathan, told Natan during their, they made a tiyul together, and obviously in that tiyul, Shabtai Tzvi told Nathan about all these different biographical, statements. And amongst the things it says, amongst the Rabbi Avram, it says in the year, whatever, I think it's 1646, on Tisha B'Av, Mordechai Tzvi will have a son whose name will be Shabtai, and he is going to be Mashiach.
Well, he's telling him the story.
Well, no. That's what appears in this manuscript, in this supposed, vision of this Ashkenazi region, you know, Ki'ilu prophesying Shabtai Tzvi's arrival 500 years before he came, before he was born. Now, I mean, just for starters, is not, you know, nothing, even though he's of Ashkenazi descent, is obviously unaware of the fact that most Ashkenazim didn't and probably weren't that aware of the concept of family names. And Tzvi, Shabtai Tzvi, Tzvi is a family name. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely what we call, I wouldn't say that's the worst mistake being made here, but that's what we would call a clear historical error. There's other interesting things, yeah, whatever, Shabtai Tzvi, I don't want to say him over. Shabtai Tzvi had this wild dream and that wild dream, and blah, 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 all sorts of fascinating things, which is the only way he could have known them, is that Shabtai Tzvi told it to him. Okay. Now, there's two key ideas in this document, which are important because these are termed Shabbatian doctrines. Key ideas in the whole Shabtai Tzvi movement. One is that Shabtai Tzvi, Mishas Mashiach, will not fight military battles.
Okay.
Rather, he will fight via prayer.
Okay.
That's actually, all these type of ideas, there's different source material for it. In Tanakh and Chazal, which one could sort of ki'ilu, you know, if you separate, it's sort of like, you know, sort of like Christian claims, certain like Hine Yaskel Avdi, the very famous parsha in Yeshaya. Hine Yaskel Avdi, no, we don't know about that one. Okay, Hine Yaskel Avdi. That's the Messianic parsha. And what it says there, what it says there applies to Mashiach. Okay, whatever, all the details, now let's not worry about. But that is a Messianic parsha. There are other parshas that Christians claim, you know, the virgin birth one. You know how Al Mahar Rabbi Yehuda Spain, we've heard of that one, guys? No, you guys know it. It's another Christian. That's a big mistake. As Ibn Ezra says, it's not even a Messianic prophecy. And it's hard to understand how anyone thinks it has anything to do with Yashka being Mashiach and redeeming the Jewish people. It's actually nothing to do with it at all. So this is like a similar thing in Shabbatian ideas. Some of them are like totally off, and others they're debatable if they're, you know, how off they are. In other words, they're off in terms of being applied to Shabtai Tzvi, but in terms of understanding how Mashiach is going to work, they're debatable. So this idea that Mashiach will not fight any military battles is a very difficult and debatable issue. Is that true or not true? Now, the other idea in the Machzor de Rabbi Avraham, which is certainly radical and definitely doesn't sound that Jewish, is the concept of having blind faith in Shabtai Tzvi as Mashiach, and that he will need no proof. He won't have to have any proof to his being Mashiach. Rather, you are just supposed to believe it. Now, as you may be aware, this idea definitely has a Christian flavoring to it.
Just believing?
The concept of blind faith and don't bring any proof is a Christian idea. I think we might get there tonight. There's a Jewish... We're not Mamashka, we can get to the fair. Well, maybe we'll discuss... If we don't get there tonight, we'll get there next week. Talking about how if someone claims to be a prophet, what exactly Besdin does to them, that there's formula in Judaism, and that concept of blind faith. I mean, it doesn't apply to, you know, the idea of blind faith doesn't apply neither to a Navi, Ochara, nor to someone who claims he's Mashiach. Now, very typically, the way Nathan comes up with this idea is classical, you know, Nathan of Gaza, corruption. Corruption of sources. In other words, He'll make a misdiuk. He will take a statement out of context, isolate it, make a funny diuk in it, and build a whole piece of Torah out of it.
Isn't that what Gershom was always going on about, how he didn't like that?
No, Gershom doesn't have a he's not always completely on top of this problem, because he's, as a historian, he's competent. I can't tell you exactly how competent he is as a Kabbalist. He has an axe to grind with Rabbi Yaakov Sforzes. He claims Rabbi Yaakov Sforzes does things like this. But whatever. It's funny, one of his lines is both sides to it. You know, the believers and the non-believers. The believers and the non-believers. Whatever, I don't know. Yeah, whenever he does it, I try to keep my mind open to see if I think he's saying something or not. But over here, I didn't write down the... I'll take a Rambam here. The Rambam says... That Mashiach doesn't have to do miracles. That's what the Rambam says. Well, again, that's very true, but the Rambam also has a lot to say about when someone claims to be a prophet. The Rambam also says that Mashiach has to bring all the Jewish people back to Eretz Israel and do all sorts of other things. Unify. He says all sorts of other things the Rambam says Mashiach has to do. So that's like a very typical. Mashiach doesn't have to do miracles. Either Rambam also says these other things. So you can't, to isolate one statement of the Rambam from the others. And if we'd apply the Rambam's methodology for determining who's a prophet to Nassim, then we would definitely reject him. Okay. Now, I'm very bothered this entire episode. I've personally found very, very bothering. Very, very troublesome. Is there a better word for it? Very troublesome episode here.
In terms of what?
I'll explain. Okay. Nathan has a supposed prophecy, which we spoke about last week. And again, the million-dollar question, Nathan the villain, is was he completely intent, premeditated? He's premeditated. What was motivating him? It's a really difficult issue. It's a very difficult issue. What I call my working theory is he overreached himself and, was caught up in other forces which are out there. But still, there's what was motivating him. And it's important to realize that at this early point, it wasn't cut, even though it is cut and dry to us, at the time, there were plenty of big people at the time who weren't sure what to make out of this, which is also somewhat unclear. We'll talk about it probably maybe the end of this week, next week, and the week after, we'll talk about that more. But, however cut and dry it is to us, at that time wasn't that cut and dry. And the question is, what's motivating them? And this, I find this to be very, very troublesome. In other words, there's no question that this supposed manuscript called Machzeh d'Rabbi Avraham is an absolute forgery. Now, this is like a very typical piece of Gershon Shalom, of course, is Kfirut. When he talks about that, he says, well, it's not so terrible, because it was an accepted thing to claim someone earlier wrote something when you really wrote it yourself. Right? They say about the Zohar. Because that's okay. Oh, no, that's not accepted. Mainline Judaism doesn't accept that. Mainline Judaism accepts the authenticity of the Zohar. He's, of course, of the opinion the Zohar was forged by Rav Moshe de Leon. Okay, whatever. I spoke about that last year. I'm confident that the Radal's penetration of Zohar is a lot deeper than Gershon Shalom's. And the Radal has a contrast pamphlet in which he shows that Rav Moshe de Leon's other Kabbalistic writings don't go with the Zohar. So the idea that Rav Moshe de Leon forged Zohar as a Bukhari doesn't move that well. Okay, anyway. I'm very bothered by this, by Nathan forging a document. In other words, this supposed document was found right before, discovered right before Shabbat Tzvi accepts the nomination. Right. In other words, he's been nominated already and he's refusing to accept it. Basic historical analysis would tell you that Nussin thought he would need this manuscript to convince Shabbat Tzvi to accept the nomination. However, apparently, Shabbatai Tzvi went manic, and it wasn't necessary to use this document to prove it, which goes to show that Nassim definitely did not really understand what was going on in Shabbatai Tzvi's mind. which I guess can't be that shocking. He was a young man, he was brilliant, but he was a young man at the time. And but nonetheless, because Akiva was proof.
His motivation might have just been, let's mess with the crazy guy.
Say again? I don't think so. It's more complicated than that. We'll see. I mean, it's more complicated than that. I don't know. It's a big debate. That is one of the key and most difficult questions in the entire thing. If as we said last week, and I think it's true, that if you want to know who's the villain of the story, it's not Shaplay Tzvi. I mean, I'm not saying he's not to blame. He's definitely to blame. But he, at the end of the day, was a person who was unstable. And people knew about him, and no one took him seriously. The reason why the whole thing turned into a movie was because this guy Nathan Agassi, he's the guy who turns the whole thing into a movie. What was motivating him? Which is a very difficult and unclear question. Now, it's interesting that... wait a second. There are people who want to... I've seen popularized versions, which I'm not sure where they got this from. They want to let Ki'ilu say that the finding of the manuscript is what caused Shabtai Tzvi to accept the messianic, you know, appointment. But that's not clear at all. As a matter of fact, Gershon Shalom has a very long write-up. He is of the opinion that Nassim of Gaza did author this Machaz of Rabbi Avram, but it's not 100%, it's not absolutely clear if that's true or not. Could be it was a different Shabbos, you know, Sabbatean, who Sabbatean is one of Shatz's other followers who authored it, but the most likely it was Nassim. It was most likely, and therefore that the discovery of Machaz of Avram caused Shabtai Tzvi to accept the messianic nomination is minimally weak and probably absolute fiction. Because again, definitely from everything we know, it's quite clear that Shabtai Tzvi is going manic is what caused him to accept. Okay. So now, again, Shabtai Tzvi accepts the nomination. Now we're going to look at reaction. The first reaction is Shabtai Tzvi himself. And he's manic. And we know what happens when he's manic. He does crazy things. Now that people accept him as Mashiach, he does even crazier things.
Oh boy.
That's right. If you thought he was funny until now,
what's he going to do?
Okay, just wait a second. Now, this sounds innocuous, innocuous, which is he makes three rings for himself.
Three rings?
Three rings. You know, one, two, three.
One ring to rule them all.
No. You know what? That's an interesting question. Was Tolkien aware of the Shabtai Tzvi history or not? I don't know. That's an interesting idea. You know what? I don't know. That's interesting. Not that I'm aware of. He makes three rings.
Part elf, part dwarf, part man?
No. Okay. First ring has Shem Hashem, Yud Kei Vav Kei, in the standard way, spelled out. We understand what that means?
Yod Dalet.
Kesher. Just like we're not allowed to say Hashem's name, you're not allowed to say the words of Mordor. So,
Yud Vav Dalet.
Saying Mordor all the time.
No, you're saying the language of
Mordor. I don't think so. Yud Vav Dalet, Yud.
Right.
Hey, okay. Hey, Yud, hey. Vav Aleph, Vav. Okay, you got it? Okay, that's what he has that spelled out on one ring.
Okay.
He has on another ring. The Shem Shakai. Shem Dalad Yud. Spelled again. Shem Yud Dalad, Shem Yud Nun. Dalad, okay, whatever it is spelled out. Okay. Third ring. Third ring doesn't have that. Third ring, we'll get to in a moment. Okay, now.
You have to throw it in fire before this.
No. Okay, now. The first ring, we'll get back to in a moment. Why he was wearing that ring is an interesting question. The second ring, we're going to get on to another common theme in the whole Sabbatean movement. And that is that the gematria of Shin Yud Dalet, if Shin Dalet Yud, yeah. Shakai, spelled out with the Osios, is the same, and what the same gematria as Shabtai Tzvi!
That's mind blowing.
Isn't that mind blowing? Now, you know, Shabtai Tzvi Sabbateans put like an extreme amount of importance on gematrias.
Wait, Shin Dalet Yud.
No. Shin Yud Nun.
Yeah.
Dalet. Yeah. Dalet. Stalus. It's Dalet Lama Tuf.
Yeah.
Yud Vav Dalet.
It's the same as Shin.
It's the same as Shatai Svi. Okay, got it? Same gematria. Okay, the Sabbateans put a lot of importance on gematrias. And I think, did I mention the whole thing with the Vilna Gaon last week?
Possibly. Okay,
I sent this over to a couple of people, and I got positive Rabbi Ross amongst them, and I got positive reception. And I'll say it over even when I've said it before, because it's a very important idea. And the Ramban says in Chumash, you can repeat important ideas a number of times. The Torah does also. That's why the Torah repeats Shabbos so many times. That's why it repeats the idea of learning so many times. That's why it repeats the idea of Avodah Zarah so many times. Things like this, you're allowed to repeat Mishpat. Why is justice repeated so many times? Important ideas we can repeat many times. The Gaon holds. The Gaon says it's a gross misconception to think that Pshat, the basic understanding of Torah, and Sod are not separate. Now, there's a lot of people think, and I personally think this is a veiled reference to Shabtai Tzvi and his followers, and Rabbi Ross said that he thinks he hears it, and he's holding in the ideas, so I consider that somebody you can talk to about it. I hold it's a veiled reference to Shabtai Tzvi, because they would say Pshat says one thing, and Sod is in a different building. And there's that much of a connection between the two. And we can do things up Pshat, which don't make any sense at all up Pshat.
But the Gaon was saying this to counter.
Yes. I think the Gaon was saying this to count as a counter to Shabtai Tzvi. And that's what the Gaon was saying. The Sabbateans put excessive importance into gematrias. And according to the way the Gaon and the mainline approach of understanding Torah is, a gematria is called paparos. They're called adornments. And if it works with the pshat, it's very good. And if it doesn't, it's not. It doesn't intrinsically, in standard Torah understanding, have excessive importance. Anyway, nonetheless, Shabtai Tzvi did not think that way. He puts excessive importance into gematrias, saying that the gematria of Shakai, Shin Dalet Yud, and Shabtai Tzvi are the same if you spell Shakai out. And that means, quotes, there's no division, distinction, and separation between Hashem and Shabtai Tzvi and him. Now that is wild. Wait a second. Now, as a result of this, Shabtai Tzvi did two things. When he signed his letters, he had two ways he signed them. One of them is not as, again, this is gets down to, one of them he just, after he feels he's Mashiach now. And after all, you want to know how he's Mashiach? Because the gematria of Shakai and the gematria of Shabtai Tzvi are the same thing! Okay, fine. So, he has two ways he signs his letters now. One of them is Bechor Hashem, God's firstborn. Now, again, that idea is wrong in terms of application to Shabtai Tzvi. This idea of the Mashiach being the most choice example of human achievement, etc., that would be true in terms of someone who's really Mashiach.
Right.
So, Ke'ilu, in other words, Shabtai Tzvi claims to be Mashiach, so applying the term to Shabtai Tzvi is wrong in terms of that he's not Mashiach, but to apply it to Mashiach, that wouldn't intrinsically bother standard Rabbana who it would see, if they would see a letter signed by Shabtai Tzvi saying, Ani Shabtai Tzvi, Bechor Hashem, Mashiach, Chalkei Yisrael, I'm Shabtai Tzvi, God's firstborn, the Mashiach of the God of Israel. They wouldn't be bothered by that because that if he is Mashiach, then he's allowed to say that. That's not going to shock anybody who's not sure to make their what to think about the guy. Now the claim
the claim that he's closest, that he, there's quotes, no division, distinction, and separation between Hashem and him. That's Pashut. I don't understand how anyone can let him get away with that. Again, I don't have Tanakh here, but I wrote the Pasuk down because I knew, I don't know if it's Tanakh in this room. Pasuk says about Mashiach in Yirmiyah, Mam and Pasuk Chav Aleph, Mihu Zeh Arvaz Libel Akeshes Ainu Mashiach. Who thinks in his heart, who has the audacity in his heart to come all the way close to me, says Hashem. In other words, the Pasuk over there says, that the Pasuk speaking about Melech Mashiach, it says, Hashem says to Melech Mashiach, come close to me. Hashem is invite the Melech Mashiach to come close to him, because Muzah Arav is Libo. Who thinks in their heart, who has the, you know, the I don't know, the pureness, but the, you know, the idea in his mind that he could come close to Hashem without an invitation. So the idea that there's no distinction, division, etc., between Hashem and Shem Tetzvi, that idea is out. Now again, of course, the question is going to be how well known Shem Tetzvi's wild claims were. Okay. Now, he had another more controversial signature. But this more controversial signature, which I may have briefly mentioned before, is he would sign a letter, Anochi Hashem Alkecha. I guess you're listening?
Yep.
Anochi Hashem Alkecha Shabtai Tzvi.
How is that okay?
What? Well, that's not okay. The point is that's not okay. I am the Lord your God, Shabtai Tzvi. That's obviously off. But again, that is coming out of the idea that he says there's no distinction, separation between him and Hashem. He's kibyachol, embodiment of God, which is, this is again a very not Jewish idea. The Mashiach's kibyachol, God, and the Ramban and the Vikuah, you know, that's one of the things he's going to war about. Christians claim that Yashka and Yashka and God are the same thing, so that's definitely off. But Shabtai Tzvi, for some reason, somehow or another, managed to pick this idea up. He managed to pick this idea up. And as a result of that, he signed his letters occasionally, Anochi Hashem Alkecha Shabtai Tzvi. Now that is shocking. You know, there were people who, before they saw him sign a letter that way, believed he was Mashiach. But after they saw him sign, Anochi Hashem Alkecha Shabtai Tzvi, they said, well, this guy is definitely not Mashiach. You know, that's like, you're clearly going overboard.
Well, I mean, you got to feel for the guy. It's really hard to spell sincerely.
Okay. Now, one theorizes that the reason why, again, his second ring says Shakai and Shakai, is Gematria Shabtai Tzvi. The first one had Yud Kei Vav Kei spelled out also Yad Yah. And one theorizes that the reason why he had the Yud Kei Vav Kei ring was because of his Shita, that there's no, that he Kiyu is the embodiment of God.
Okay.
That the two go together. In other words, we said, why is it ring that says Yud Kei Vav Kei? What's he wearing that ring for? What's he had the ring for? Because of his Shita, that there's no chiluk, there's no, you know, no separation, distinction between him and Hashem. That's why he's wearing a ring which says God.
Okay.
So he's like topping it. You know, I told you there's two jokes about people who are crazy. Two versions of the joke. One is, I'm Mashiach. That guy's crazy. You know, he's crazy. He thinks he's Mashiach. Okay. The other version of the joke is that guy's crazy. You know why he thinks he's God? Can't be. You know why? So Shabbat seems managed to combine both of them. Okay. The third ring had some symbol on it, and it's some type of serpent. Yeah, some type of serpent that I'm not going to get into. Gershon Shalom has a long, you know, discussions theorizing what exactly was this, that, the next. I don't know, unclear. I don't think it's as important as the first two, which are definitely quite important. Okay. Now, on to more manic behavior. Shabtai Tzvi, again, when does he declare himself, when does he accept the nomination as being Mashiach? He accepts the nomination, Yud Zayin Sivan. What's coming up from Yud Zayin Sivan? Yud Zayin Sivan is exactly a month before a well-known Jewish fast. Shavasar Tammuz, Yud Zayin Tammuz. It's exactly 1 month before, you know, the 17th of Tammuz. Shabtai Tzvi and Nasan, and Nathan decide to abolish the fast of the Shabbos and Tammuz.
Oh. That's not okay.
Okay. And Nathan does not take things lying down. He himself is, he's not manic, but he's very excited with his discoveries and his ideas.
So they feast or something?
Well, not only are they going to feast, he sends letters out to everyone he knows. So all this can, again, Nathan is very well connected. Natan Hazati, Nathan of Gaza, is very well connected. Between him, people he knows, and people his father knows, he knows Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael and outside of Eretz Yisrael, and he sends letters telling them, Yedzayim Tammuz is coming up. No need to fast. You know why? Because Mashiach is here. Mashiach is not quite here. He's almost here. He's close enough. He calls it Yatza Chasen Michedra. Ki'ilu. The bridegroom has come out of his room. He's a step away, or two steps, or three steps, a couple steps away from being, absolute from being, you know, fully Mashiach. So as a result of that, there's no need to fast on Yedzayim B'Tammuz. Now this is, there's two key points here.
Go ahead.
Okay. Two key points. One is, if we look at this under like normal scope in terms of where Torah idea, is there's a basic rule that ain bezdin mevatel divrei bezdin chavero ela im kein shavlo b'chachma v'minyan. When one Jewish court makes a decree, another one cannot come and negate it unless there are equal chachma with wisdom and minyan and the same amount of smart people in it.
So they're saying
so that's in other words, people always want to know why are we stuck with all the comments to Rabbanan? The answer is they had a stature that we don't have. Right. We don't have the ability to, we don't have the halachic ability to go against something which is a Takana Gemara, something which is an absent Takana. We have no way. We just don't have the competency level to keyly revoke that. So
they're basically saying they are.
That's the problem. Is they're like not? What are they doing exactly? Like, we'll see. Just wait a second. Okay, no, we're not going to get, I don't think we'll get there this week. We're going to get there, Bezer Shem, next week. Maybe we'll get to it. Maybe we'll see. Wait a second. He does, Shabtai says a lot of interesting things he does. He does not, as far as I know, certainly not at this point, has not appointed his own Sanhedrin. In other words, it's not beyond him to say, okay, here, I'm Ki'ilu Mashiach, and I have a prophet here, and we can make our own Bezdin. And we can, with the formal act of Bezdin, we can reverse the earlier Bezdin's decree. He doesn't do that, though. That would be Ki'ilu doing it in a normal halachic way. But that's not what Shabtai is doing. He's moved by his manic mood and his Kabbalistic delusions. And as a result, he gets folded over. And as a result of that, that's not what he does. He's be'erich, he's approximately echoing a story in Zechariah. The story says in Zechariah, it says they sent four or five, a group of people sent a question to Zechariah HaNavi, to the prophet Zechariah. They said, should we fast on Tisha B'Av, like we've been fasting for the last 70 years? Excuse me.
This is right after
Bais Sheni has been built. After Bais Sheni was built, people sent a message to the Navi Zechariah. It's in Zechariah, approximately Perek, I think Gimel or so, Dalet. I can find enough time to source it. And there's nothing here right now for me to open up. But, whatever, I'm not going to try to do it on the spot. Shalkali, they do have a tray also here. So it's Zechariah Perek Zion. And it says over there, that's Zion Ches. Pasuk says, Vaidvar Shem Tzvokas Eilai Lemar, Pasuk Perchas, Pasuk Yirchas, Koma Hashem Yuchas Yitaskov, Kamar Shem Savokas, Tom Ravid, Soma Hamishi, Soma Shvi, Soma Siri, Yu, Vais Shol, Salsam Simcha, Modern Tovim, Vema Shom Havel. That's enough. That's all we need here. He says, and he says it earlier, a little other things also, but we'll just leave this enough for us. The Navi says that the fast of the fourth month, the fast of the fifth month, the fast of the seventh month, fast of the tenth month should be for Beis Yehuda, for you know, happiness and joy, and a moed, and moedim tovim. And rather than fast, do good deeds. That's what it says in Zechariah.
So Nassim is Ki'ilu saying, well, I had a prophecy now, Sheshavtes is Mashiach. So that means we're like one step away.
Well, I mean, I think you might be able to understand in terms of Nassim, that if he's kind of like riding the wave of what's his name, Sheshavtes, he's kind of like, it's like kind of like an imam min. If you believe that Shabtai Tzvi is Mashiach, then you believe whatever Nasan Tzvi,
says.
Because you're saying that you believe that he's a prophet, and you believe that he's...
Okay, that's good. You're right. You're right. He was self-deluded. I definitely agree that the key with Nasan is he's self-deluded. It's still not clear. It's going to be more complicated than that. But yeah, you're right. Nassim was self-deluded. Yes, I agree with that. And once he says, once he believes his own prophecy, then he's going to go to almost any way and means to justify it. And it's going to lead him to do a lot of funny things. And this is one of the first of them. As he's saying, look, if he's Mashiach, then we have a precedent. We have a precedent in Torah that once Mashiach, once you're in an era of geula, of redemption, you no longer have to keep the fasts, like we saw by Sheni. Even though by Sheni wasn't complete geula, by Sheni wasn't complete redemption. And nonetheless, the Navi told him not to keep the fasts. So too says Nathan, no fasts. Okay, now as Bamberger points out, Bamberger is a very interesting point. Hamburger, not Bamberger. Hamburger points out. He's the, you know, the Israeli Haredi writer about these things. And he has a lot of interesting points. He's worth reading because he doesn't. Okay, each person has their own, you know, brings their own, you know, own material, etc. So there's like so much source material, it's like impossible. I would have to spend like 5 years working on it to say something real, real, real. But okay, as Hamburger points out, it's mistaken to think that Shabtai Tzvi and Nassim don't like fasting. They like fasting. They're into fasting. As a matter of fact, they tell people to fast 2 days, 4 days, with Shabbos to Shabbos all the time.
Right.
They have nothing. They are into fasting and mortifications and, you know, classic Kabbalistic penances, etc., etc. They're very into that. And they told people to do that all the time.
But when it comes to
fast about Golas, about because of something from the exile. No. Don't do that one. Fast up until the sun, Yitzhak Matavis. Yitzhak Matavis. But eat. On Yitzhak Matavis, and eat on Tisha B'Av. And that they're very into. That's very important. I think it's a very good and important point.
Based on the precedence of Sephardia, do they literally get rid of every single fast? Or do they just like...
Yes, they get rid of every single fast. Yes, they absolutely do. No, not Yom Kippur.
But somebody
died. Yeah, all the other fasts they get rid of. That's right. That's right. And they celebrate Tinus Esther at the wrong time. Fine. Yeah, okay. What do you want? Okay. Fine. I want to call it here because if we start the next thing, we have to go on a lot more. And therefore, we'll call it here. Okay. We'll see more reaction next week. Yeah.